Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Print Supplies Frosses. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies provides managed print solutions with local support and remote ink monitoring, saving your business time and money. Print Supplies, your local printer and photocopier company.
Hello and welcome along to Business Matters here on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Later in the programme, I'll be hearing why thousands of people here in the county have money in bank accounts that are earning paltry interest rates, despite the fact that much better offers are out there. So do stay with us for that, and indeed some very interesting thoughts and advice when it comes to do with your savings and some pointers on long-term investment strategy. I'll be speaking with personal finance expert Dan Malone of Honest.ie, a recently launched and informative comparison platform for savings. But before that, I just want to give you an update, firstly, on last weekend's hugely successful Highland Radio Hospitality Awards. Highland Radio's CEO, Sean Quinn, came into studio to reflect on the winners and indeed the event, which continues to go from strength to strength.
Incredible, Chris. I have to say, I'm sitting here after the event delighted. The response that we got, I suppose through the process from the shortlisting to the voting, we had over 110 businesses in the room in Jackson's on Sunday night. That's a major achievement. We were sold out again, which is great. But the whole atmosphere in the room, I could feel it. The anticipation from when they walked in the door, the reception, the drinks reception, the style, the atmosphere, it was just electric. And that makes our job so much easier. And it also tells you we're doing the right thing. And looking back, I wouldn't change a thing about the night. We got it right. But I want to thank the 500 plus people in the room that made it, because they 100% made it. They made a night very special. People come up to me, whether they'd won, whether they'd lost, to say it was an incredible night. And I want to thank each individual person who was in that room, because collectively what we did, we embraced the hospitality sector, and that's exactly what I wanted to do.
And it's all about showcasing Donegal, what it has to offer, and these awards, well, they speak volumes. Let's just look at some of the winners, Sean. Once again, it was divided into different categories.
It was indeed, yes. So we had we had some major winners on the night. If I look at the tourist attraction of the year, it went to the Welga Alpaca Way in Malin, and they were absolutely delighted. One of the big ones, anticipated ones, was the Pub of the Year. Everybody wants to be the Pub of the Year. And Biddy O'Barnes won that one. And very deserving. It's an incredible bar. And every time I drive past it, which is not that often, the car park's always full. So they're doing something right there. We also had the Restaurant of the Year, which is the Railway Tavern in Fann. So you can already see there's a mix of different locations of different winners. And one of the big ones on the evening was the Hotel of the Year. And for the first time ever, the Shandon Hotel in Dunfanaghy won that. So congratulations to them. It was a major achievement to win that one. And it was highly anticipated on the evening. It's one of the last awards that we gave out. And they were delighted. We have a couple of individual winners as well, which are really important to mention. The Hotel Manager of the Year went to Rosemary Boyce, who's doing an incredible job down in the Kerry Gart Hotel. And also the Wedding Coordinator was Emma Brown from the Gallen Group. And I spoke to Emma afterwards, and she was emotional was an understatement. She was just so taken aback. But what I found with Emma and Rosemary is they got a lot of votes from their customers, and it made a massive difference to them to actually winning it. We had over 90,000 votes in the whole process. That, to me, it blew me away. It grew again from that. I think it was over 70,000 last year. I said it's going to get close to 100,000. It almost did. I think next year we'll probably do over 100,000. And the final one, just an individual, was a Bar Person of the Year. And it went to Paddy McNeilis, who works in the Cottage Bar in Letterkenny. So it was, and that's only a little sample of some of the winners. On the evening, there were 40 winners. But really, there were 500 winners, Chris.
And it's all about public engagement and, you know, people out there voting online, big numbers, and it reflects what's going on the ground. So it's a pretty accurate overall picture that we're getting.
It is. And, you know, it's good for our brand to be associated with that, but also our sponsors. And whilst I get a chance, I just want to thank our sponsors again. So we had category sponsors for the tourism and entertainment, which was Airgrid. In the restaurant, it was Northwest Gas. And Safetech were on the hotel section. And finally, we had a new sponsor this year in the bar and pub, which is Efficient Renewables. Put that together with our two main sponsors, Donegal County Council and Fáilte Ireland. They're all recognised brands who have benefited from what we've done. Because when you have 90,000 votes, that's 90,000 posts on social media, the amount of shares we got, our brand and their brands has carried right across the county and beyond, because there's people voting from all over the world for this, because obviously they want to recognise and they want to choose their favourite hospitality business to vote for. So when you put it together, it makes a lot of sense, but a lot of work, but absolutely worth every second that we put behind this, the resource we put behind it to deliver what I think was an exceptional night last Sunday.
It's a firmly established date on the calendar now, and no doubt you have it penciled in already for next year.
You're probing me on that one. You're probing me. Do you know what, Chris? I reflected on it Monday. It's a very easy decision. We'll be back in Jackson's next year. We're absolutely delighted to be on board with them again. So many people said to me on the evening, the food that was served there was exceptional. So I can tell everybody officially, we will be the Highland Radio Hospitality Awards in 2027 on the 7th of March, which is a Sunday evening. And we'll launch it just after Christmas, as we did this year. And I think it's going to be even bigger.
And if anybody wants to catch up on things, the Highland Radio website, the social media platforms, lots of clips and smiles and happiness out there.
It's everywhere. It's wall to wall. On our social media pages, our website, there's loads of photographs. But there were so many photographs taken in the room on the evening that loads of businesses are sharing them. I'm sure you've seen loads. Any person I meet at the moment is saying that looked like a great night on Sunday night. I want to finally thank all my staff because the effort that they put in to deliver a great evening. But there's two girls in particular who live and breathe it, is Karina and Anya. And to deliver what they delivered again consistently, but with improvements, was amazing. Keith Fletcher was added to the entertainment this year, and he nearly broke a few chairs trying to jump up on chairs. It just made the room electric. It added to it, I thought, on the evening. So we're delighted. And with that, we 100% look forward to 2027, and it won't be that far down the line. We're going to have our customer service later in the year. But the hospitality, we're just absolutely delighted that everybody enjoyed it. Well done to the winners, but congratulations to everybody who was there on the evening to enjoy what was a brilliant night.
Now, before I let you go, there's a big event coming up in the United States between the 20th and the 22nd of March. Highland Radio, very much involved in the Donegal Diaspora Initiative in Philadelphia.
We are, and we're really looking forward to it, Chris. So we're going over, it's on from the 20th to the 22nd. And we've been involved in this from the outset. The committee came to us and said, would Highland be interested in coming on board? And we absolutely are, and we're looking forward to it. So it starts with a business forum on Friday. And it's going to actually, I know of a lot of people from Donegal are actually going over to it. It's going to be a global event. You're going to have people from business, sport, culture and music who will be attending. And it's great for our brand to be associated with it. So I'm moderating actually a panel discussion of three different business people across the globe. They're based in America, but do business across the world. So I'm looking forward to that. And we also have a live broadcast. So Washington's going to broadcast live on the Friday afternoon from the business forum. And we'll be talking to some people who have travelled to it, so to businesses. There'll be different sectors that will speak to different people. It'll be great if you get a chance to tune in I think it's going to be around about 7 o'clock our time over here that they will be live on air. But we'll tell people in advance of it. But yeah, I actually cannot believe it's just round the corner, and it is. We're traveling over the day after Paddy's Day to get there to prep in advance of it. And there's going to be loads of sport as well. Obviously, there's teams traveling from all over the world to play in the Gaelic competition on the Saturday. And we will be at the forefront of that. Oisin and Brendan will cover that on the Saturday. So it's going to be a packed few days over there. I'm hoping all the snow's gone. They're telling me it should. There's none left in the sky, but I don't believe them. But yeah, it's great. And we're delighted as Highland Radio to be asked to go over. And we'll deliver a brilliant show from over there to our diaspora and to our people at home as well.
And once again, there's the coverage on the radio and plenty online as well.
Oh, there, absolutely. We'll have loads of coverage online. And as I said, it'll be wall-to-wall reports on the competition, all the games that are happening. I think there's over 30 teams going over. I was chatting to a team from London. There's 60 of them going. So it's going to be a busy few days. And I'm absolutely delighted. I've never been to Philadelphia before. It's going to be a new experience. But it's great to take that brand outside Donegal. We travel well as a brand, and we're looking forward to delivering and meeting new potential customers, listeners. But we also want to deliver back to our listeners here so they can feel part of what we're going to go do and try and deliver.
And that was Sean Quinn, CEO of Highland Radio. Well, just in relation to that big Donegal Diaspora Initiative in Philadelphia, for more information, do go to the website connectdonegal.org. That's connectdonegal, all one word, .org. And you will see the full list of events and the participants. Ireland is a nation of savers, but many of us have money in what are known as current, demand or instant access accounts, which typically among Irish banks pay very low interest rates. However, Irish savers do have options, and these are far greater than many people may realise. But why are relatively few people doing anything about it? That was just one of a series of questions I put to finance expert Dan Malone of Honest.ie, a recently established comparison platform for savings, when I spoke to him recently.
Yeah, I think there is widespread kind of inertia when it comes to our savings. I think, you know, we've grown up generation after generation believing that your money is kind of best served in one of the three pillar banks. Obviously, used to be, we used to have much more banks here, 5 banks at the recent, but now we're down to the 3. And I think, you know, we as a people have been historically very conservative with our money, as you say, nation of savers. Some engagement with our pensions, but not to the level that we need to be. And I think there's still, you know, I always talk about this idea of residual financial trauma from the financial crisis. And I think people are still very skeptical when they come across new alternative options that they may not have heard of before. And I think, you know, people are very vigilant for scammers and ways in which they could potentially get done out of some money, and very questioning of whether something is legitimate, which is, you know, at the end of the day, that is good. It's good for people to be apprehensive towards new financial products. But I think there is a limit in terms of being kind of closed off to alternative options. And I think, you know, a big part of the reason why we haven't done a lot with our savings, and the big part of the reason why there's, you know, 144 billion quid earning an average of 0.13%, losing negative 1.9% after taxes, inflation, 170 billion quid total on deposit in the country at the moment, is there's just a lack of awareness about the alternative options. And I think once we start becoming more aware of them and some of the misconceptions around them start getting debunked, then people might be more willing to go further afield than just the same old traditional three banks.
So it's like a lot of other areas in life. If you shop around, you can get a little bit of value. And in terms of deposit accounts, and even ones that you may have to give a little bit of notice for withdrawals, there are banks out there offering considerably higher interest rates. Many of them are foreign banks. A lot of them, you just do it all online. You may never interact with a human being at all. Is there a generational gap? Are younger people more likely to try a foreign bank?
Do you know what? I don't actually think there's much of a generational gap as people think. You know, Revolut have over 3 million users in Ireland alone. And so, like, to get that level of usership, you obviously have to be acquiring new customers across generations. And obviously, younger people will be much more comfortable on average and probably have a higher digital IQ than some older generations, and that's to be expected. But I wouldn't say it's fair to say that, you know, all the generations are completely closed off to the idea of using digital alternatives. But I definitely do think that there is, you know, a high degree of conservatism towards them. I think it's like 89% of Irish customers still use one of the three main banks as their main current account, even though, as you said, you know, there's 3 million plus people in the country with an EO bank account. So I think, like, from that perspective, there is a willingness, but there's probably, again, just that apprehension about engaging with it on a more serious level because of fears of security or fears of getting restricted or locked out of an account or whatever it may be. But you are right in saying that many of these alternative options, be it the neobanks or be it the savings alternatives, are primarily done online and there aren't the physical branches that people are used to. So you have to kind of get used to the idea of having a totally digital experience. And because of that totally digital experience, that's actually a big part of the reason why we're able to get all of these really nice extra features, be it budgeting tools and extra perks attached to a current account or higher interest rates on the savings side of things.
Yeah, so as you've mentioned, you know, go back 10 or 20 years ago, that sort of choice wasn't there. The digital age has transformed things. So where are we at now? I mean, effectively, you can put money into a bank in countries all over Europe, in the EU, and there are guarantees there for your money, state-backed guarantees.
Absolutely. So I think it's important to kind of differentiate between the types of options that are available. You know, I think when people talk about digital banks and online interest rates, everyone thinks of Revolut, Bunk, N26, soon to be Monzo coming into the Irish market. And these are all what we like to call challenger banks. So those kind of traditional digital banks that offer current accounts. But actually what you'll find is, you know, many of the top savings accounts specifically, so we're specifically talking about an account that you put money into for the sole purpose of earning an interest on that money. You can't necessarily spend the money when it's in there. So again, a traditional savings account, a lot of those options are offered by, for example, partner banks with Raisin Ireland. So for those who don't know, Raisin Ireland is an online marketplace platform, originally founded in Berlin in Germany, but since expanded to many countries across the European Union, including Ireland. And they give Irish savers access to, you know, I think it's 31 banks at the moment across the EU. So you can effectively set up a Raisin account, deposit money onto the platform, and then you have your pick of the litter in terms of what accounts you can access. So you can find accounts in France, in Germany, in Spain, all across the EU, and a wide range of either fixed-term deposit accounts where you lock away your deposit for an agreed period of time in exchange for a guaranteed rate over that time, or an instant access account where you put your money in, you can withdraw whenever you like, and you get a much more competitive interest rate. Now, in terms of how competitive that rate is, we're looking at around 15 times the average Irish rate, so they are very, very strong. And as you say, it's all backed by the European Deposit Guarantee Scheme. So I think one of the biggest misconceptions about, you know, these digital non-Irish alternatives is that they're not as safe as the Irish banks. That's just not the case at all. European banking legislation requires that if you are operating as a bank in the EU, you have to adhere to the same safety regulations and you are covered by the same deposit guarantees. So that is €100,000 per bank per depositor, fully guaranteed by the state that regulates the bank. So that's the exact same protection that applies to the likes of AIB, PTSB and Bank of Ireland.
And if somebody is setting up an account with one of these banks, is there more or less or much the same amount of requirements? You have to provide utility bills and proof of identity and things like that?
I would say the requirements are probably on par, but the means by which those requirements are obtained is significantly more efficient. You know, the greatest example I can give of that is it's no exaggeration to say that like you can set up a current account with a neobank in quite literally less than 10 minutes. Whereas if you set up like a current account with one of the traditional banks, to get that account fully operational, including, you know, receiving your card and registering for online banking, you'd be looking at anywhere between 5 to 7 working days. So it's a very, very substantial difference in terms of the onboarding requirements. But the actual savings accounts, if you're not looking for like a alternative banking product, if you're just looking for an online savings account, again, something like Raisin, you can sign up in 10, 15 minutes, just the standard stuff that we're used to now in terms of, you know, verifying your identity with a passport or another kind of verified document, and then proof of address, confirming your tax details through your PPS number. And then all of a sudden, once those verification checks are completed, you have access to that kind of platform. And again, that's, you know, 30 plus banks opened up instantaneously. And there are other options too. I think one of the more recent ones is Moco, who is that's a subsidiary bank of the Bawag Group in Austria, and they're actually one of the leading contenders to buy PTSB at the moment. But they recently launched in Ireland with an instant access savings account that's offering 2.1%. And actually for a limited time, they're offering a 2.6% rate on a instant access account. I mean, you also have people like Raisin who actually have their own bank called Raisin Bank. And when you sign up to the Raisin Ireland platform as a new customer, you can get a instant access guaranteed rate of 3.1% for 3 months. So there's really, really competitive incentives being offered for Irish savers to try and encourage people to make the move and to start getting more out of their savings.
So let's just throw a few figures out there. So say somebody has 10,000 in a deposit account that's earning 0.25% interest or maybe less, they could switch it to one of these banks with a greater rate. And the key is, of course, with inflation at the moment, if you have a deposit account or demand account there that's earning minimal interest, it's actually losing money every day in real terms.
Correct. And I think inflation is one of those things that people hear about, but they don't actually, I suppose, it is hard to kind of conceptualize this idea that your money is eroding away, but yet your bank balance isn't actually declining in real time. It technically is, because things are getting more expensive around you as you purchase things, but it's not something that you can see quite clearly in your bank account. So, you know, we always talk about what the goal of saving or investing more broadly is, and at a minimum, it's always to at least protect your money from the effects of inflation. And if you look at the medium-term target inflation rate for the Eurozone area, of which Ireland is obviously a member, the target rate for the policymakers is 2%. So for your money to retain its value, you need to achieve a return on that money of at least 2% after taxes. So in actual fact, with many of the competitive instant access accounts that are offering, you know, 2%, 2.1%, that alone is not going to fully cut it. It'll get you close, but it's not going to fully cut it after taxes and inflation. So that's why on the longer end of short-term and medium-term savings, looking at things like fixed-term accounts where you can start to get rates maybe closer to 3% if holding cash is a priority, is a more likely way to protect your money from the effects of inflation. But as we always say, if we're really looking at like long-term preservation of wealth, there's absolutely no substitute for your pension and long-term investing. So savings is just one component of a much greater picture.
You're listening to Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Join me again after this break.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies. Based in Frosses, Print Supplies has 21 years experience delivering managed print solutions that save you time and money. With remote monitoring and local hands-on support, they take the hassle out of printers and photocopiers. Email sales@printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Welcome back. I'm speaking with personal finance expert Dan Malone of honest.ie. Your website, Dan, was set up recently, and one of the great things about it is it's essentially a free comparison website. And that is one of the issues, because people, maybe they don't have the time or the know-how to just do that bit of shopping around, so you can simplify things for them.
Absolutely, and we're just getting started. We're trying to expand as much as we can. So savings was kind of just the launch pad for us. We have our savings comparison tool up there, so you can compare over 235 savings accounts right across Ireland and Europe, all side by side. Total transparency about terms, conditions, fees, interest, how everything works. All of the things we mentioned there about like the deposit guarantee scheme and your protections and how your money is protected. We go into really great detail about tax and deposit interest retention tax and how to declare tax or how to pay and file tax on foreign interest earned. And then up next, we're hopefully getting ready to launch our current account section. And then eventually we're going to move into our investment section then as well and really kind of demystifying that side of things and bringing some good tools to people to really kind of democratize this and spread the word and hopefully get more people engaging early and often with their financial well-being.
And I know you're fairly passionate about, shall we say, the need for a change in the way we educate people to look at their day-to-day finances, and maybe we're not doing things right. And by way of example, we have a bit of a pensions time bomb in this country, and maybe that shouldn't be happening.
Well, I think, you know, I've been talking about the pension crisis for a while now, and I think it's one of those ones where I feel like it doesn't get the coverage that it deserves. I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of pressing issues in this country. Housing being a very notable one, infrastructure becoming more of a hot topic lately. But really, as you say, like we have a very, very serious retirement crisis in this country. We have a rapidly aging population. The number of people in retirement by 2050 is set to double. The ratio of people working relative to people in retirement is set to drop significantly. So the people who will be drawing on the state pension will effectively double, but the people who are actually working, funding that state pension will be less. So it's really never been more important, both for individuals and the government, to be engaging with private pensions as early as possible to ensure that people have, you know, the capacity to support themselves outside of the state pension, because God knows what that system will look like in 20 or 30 years' time when we do get to that situation with our demographics. And, you know, the prudent thing to do is to just kind of prepare for the worst now. You know, I oftentimes tell people, just imagine a world where the state pension doesn't exist or gets means tested or something like that, and try to prepare now for the eventuality of that world, just in case. And I think that serves as a good benchmark, because you'll start to really kind of up the game then, if that's the target and the mentality you have.
And do you detect there's a shift away from people putting just money straight into accounts, whether they be current accounts or accounts for a fixed term, and maybe people investing more in shares, and the fact that you can just go onto your phone now and you can invest in the stock market so easily?
Well, that's effectively the world that I want to live in. It's the culture, the financial culture I want to help cultivate in this country. But it's very much kind of one step at a time. Like, I've been doing, you know, online financial education for 5 or 6 years now. And when I first started, I was really, really heavily like pushing the idea of like education around the stock market and long-term investing and understanding the sensible way to invest in shares and the equity markets as a whole. But I realized that, you know, there's definitely an appetite for that content at the moment, but we almost have to like go back a couple of steps. And it's like, okay, well, what's the things we can tackle now? Well, we can tackle how people are using their bank accounts and how they're using their savings accounts, because they're more familiar with that. And then when we get them accustomed to, you know, looking out for alternatives and growing their money and getting more used to digital products, well, then we can kind of bring them into the ecosystem of personal investing and pensions. But, you know, the sooner people engage with this, the better. But you kind of have to bring them on the journey, and savings is the start of that. But yeah, I think like long term, as I was saying to you before, you know, savings is all well and good, but it's not going to savings alone will never have you financially secure for retirement. You really need to be achieving a return on your cash that's far in excess of the average inflation rate, ideally somewhere in the region of 5.5% return after taxes of inflation, which would require you to get about 8 to 10% return before taxes of inflation. And the only way to do that consistently, as proven by the statistics over the last 100 years, is to invest in the global stock markets. Now, there are tried and tested ways to do that safely and without taking on an excessive amount of risk. But what you have to do is, number one, you have to understand the products and how they work. And number two, you have to commit to the timeline. And the timeline is the most important thing with stock market investing, because you have to be in it for the long run. This isn't something that you're going to, you know, change your financial circumstances overnight. You need to be willing to invest consistently and scale and increase the size of your investments over 10, 15, 20 years. And that's the real way you can achieve a meaningful impact on your wealth.
So tell us a little bit about terms that seem to be popping up with more regularity, like fractional shares and ETFs. So what are they all about?
Yeah, so, I mean, the two things you've mentioned there are more specific, obviously, to the world of investing. So I'll tackle the ETFs one first, because that's probably more pertinent and important to understand. So ETF stands for Exchange Traded Fund, and it's effectively a type of investment product that regular people like yourself and myself can invest our money into, and it can grow over time. Well, so how does that work, and what are we investing in? So effectively, an exchange traded fund can be thought of as a company, and that company goes off and they buy shares in lots and lots of other companies. So the best example I can give is the S&P 500 in America. So the S&P 500 is actually an index. It's a measurement tool that measures the stock performance of the 500 largest companies in the United States of America. So what you get are these things called S&P 500 ETFs. So what an S&P 500 ETF will do, or an S&P 500 exchange traded fund, is it will try to provide investors with the measurement or the performance of those 500 stocks. And it does that by, as I say, they set up a company and they go and they buy all of those 500 stocks in accordance with the different proportions that the measurement tool uses to track them. Now, there's complexities around that, and it's challenging to explain it in a short time, but that's the lowdown of it. So that when you go and you buy shares in the ETF and you put your money into the shares of that specific company, you're actually getting exposure to the 500 other companies that ETF owns. So all of a sudden, you can buy shares in one company, and that money is effectively spread across 500 other companies, not just one particular type of ETF. So you can get ETFs where it owns quite literally the entire global stock market. So your money could be spread across thousands of different companies all at once. And the data shows us that over 15 or 20 years, this is called passive investing. So-called passive investing in the stock market is one of the best ways to invest, and it consistently outperforms the more kind of Hollywood-styled active picking of investments that you might see in movies. It's a very popular investing strategy, and one that I am a big advocate of when people engage in the stock market. And it's by far the easiest and most accessible way for 99% of people to invest, because you can kind of just pick your one or two funds that you want to invest in, and then you can use these investing apps, of which there are many operating in Ireland, to kind of put your contributions on autopilot, and so that you never really have to think about it. It just kind of ticks away in the background. And what's funny is that Ireland as a country, we're actually the European leader for these types of products, for these exchange traded funds or ETFs. So fund managers from all over the world will come to Ireland and they'll choose Ireland as the location to set up these companies, these ETFs. And the reason why is because we have such a wide breadth of taxation treaties with different countries around the world. That's very, very attractive for these fund managers to come here, because it allows their funds to perform quite well, specifically the American funds, because we have a very favorable tax treaty with the United States of America. So it's funny that Ireland is actually a global leader for this product, but I guarantee if I walk down Grafton Street here now and I try to ask, 20 or 30 people what an ETF is, they'd be saying, oh, sorry, do you mean electronic funds transfer? They wouldn't know at all. It would be totally lost on them. Yeah. But so there's a big education piece to do there. In terms of the fractional shares, this is kind of a, I won't say it's a new introduction or new innovation because it's been around for a while, but essentially fractional shares makes it so that you can start investing with effectively as little as 1 euro. So if you imagine one single share in Microsoft, I don't know what the share price of Microsoft is today, but let's just say it's 250 euro. Previously, you know, years and years ago, you would have to have at least 250 euro to buy a share in Microsoft. But nowadays, what you can do is you can come along with as little as 1 euro and you can buy a fraction of one share in Microsoft. And so effectively, you can get exposure to that stock or to many stocks with very small amounts of money without having the full euro value of one full share. And this makes investing a lot more democratized and accessible to people who are just beginning.
And of course, things can go up, they can also go down. And we live in an age that many people are influenced by what they see online. I came across the term recently, finfluencers. So I suppose Warren Buffett falls into that as well. But people are following people online, getting tips, and there's no shortage of advice out there. So maybe it's a bit of a minefield trying to decide who you're going to follow and who's giving you the best advice.
Yeah, look, and it's one of those things where it definitely has, it's for better or worse, you know. Like traditionally, the realm of kind of financial information was kind of reserved to traditional financial consultations with advisors who would have to be regulated by their local regulator, in this case, or in our case, the Central Bank of Ireland, to give out formal financial advice. And so, you know, the Central Bank of Ireland kind of makes it quite clear on their website that financial education institutions or entities are exempted from needing a license to publish information online. And, you know, to a large extent, that does make sense because it's just information. It's entirely up to you whether you choose to read it and whether you choose to decide on it and what you decide to do with it. But I would kind of always say to people, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are publishing financial information. There's a lot of people out there who are publishing like what could be very clearly considered to be financial advice. And so you should always kind of, I would caution against kind of just listening to the opinion of one person. If you are going to use online sources, you know, you should do your own research as much as possible. Try to educate yourself on the topic. If you're looking at one particular topic, try to compare the opinions of 2, 3, 4 people if possible. Always kind of check to see, you know, if they have any kind of educational or practical experience in financial services. You know, they could very well have qualifications in accountancy or tax or financial advice like myself, or they could just be a casual commentator, which is also fine. You know, you don't have to have formal financial education in financial services or in personal finance to be very well versed on it. It's definitely not a requirement, but it's just one of those things that, you know, there's a certain amount of cop on that has to be put into practice here if you're going to be seeking financial information online. And I think, you know, people nowadays are getting quite savvy with understanding who's a bad actor and who isn't.
Yeah, and there's so much choice out there. I think you said 235 banks on your own comparison site. So that just shows in Europe here alone, somebody anywhere in Ireland, there is a great choice out there. Honest.ie, that's your website for more information. Just finally, if you were giving advice to somebody, they'd maybe 10 grand to invest as a long-term investment, what sort of avenue would you be steering them down?
Yeah, look, if we're talking about long-term investing as opposed to using, you know, deposit structures or something like that, as I said, the single best way to invest based on 100 years worth of data is to invest consistently in low-cost index fund exchange traded funds, like we were just discussing. So, you know, I have a YouTube channel as well. If you just search Dan Malone Money on YouTube. I've been building that channel up for 5 or 6 years, and I've 300 plus videos covering all sorts of Irish financial topics. So And if you are interested in learning about what ETF investing is, how it works, how you can get started, all the things to kind of set you on the right course, that's definitely the place to go. But yeah, absolutely. Like if you're someone who has a lump sum there that you know you're not going to need in the next 3, 4, or 5 years, and you're willing to part with it to kind of like leave it invested and to try and achieve good growth on it, then absolutely, I'd strongly like encourage it to start getting into investing and to start learning about how this stuff works, because you know the best time to start was yesterday, but today is absolutely fine too.
Yeah, and as they say, past performance is no there's no guarantee of future returns there. And with AI and all the changes and volatility, would you suspect that, you know, we're going to see a lot more sort of fluctuations when it comes to stock market returns, just because of the nature of things at the moment?
Look, I think the fact of the matter is nobody knows what way the stock market is going to go in the short term. It doesn't matter if you're a professional fund manager in New York or you're a casual commentator in a bedroom somewhere. It's just everyone's just trying to have the best guess they can, and that's why we all kind of take a long-term mentality on it, because, you know, if you go onto any of these ETFs and you look up like their stock chart on Google and you go to the all-time chart, so you can see like all the way back to, you know, whatever, at the 1990s or 80s or whenever it is in some cases, you know, it's a pretty significant sight of like the upwards trajectory of the stock market over the long term. But if you were to try to pick out a random week in 2004, you'd struggle to get your mouse over it, let alone actually identify it. So I think the message there is, you know, there's absolutely no point trying to guess, you know, what AI is going to do with the markets over the short term. All you should trust in is historical data. And like you say, obviously, like past performance isn't indicative of future results, but it's more so the concept that we're talking about here, that, you know, in 10, 20 or 30 years time, based on what we've seen for the last 100 plus years, you probably won't be able to see the impact of AI in 2026 or 2027 on that chart. And you kind of just have to stay the path, block out the noise of whatever is going on with politics or global affairs or technological developments, and just trust in the data. And that's honestly the best way to do it, you know.
Well, my thanks to finance expert Dan Malone of Honest.ie. Well, that's it for this week's Business Matters here on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Don't forget, you can contact me by email. The address is businessmatters@highlandradio.com. May I wish you a healthy, happy and profitable week ahead. Until the next time, goodbye.
Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Prince of Plays Frosses. With 21 years in business, Prince of Plays provides managed print solutions with local support and remote ink monitoring, saving your business time and money. Prince of Plays, your local printer and photocopier company.